Good evening. You're listening to the Hour of the Time, and I'm still William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got quite a bit of important information to give you today. That is, if you're an American and care about the future for your children, the future of liberty and freedom, then you're going to need pen and paper, and you're going to need to take some notes today, folks. And I hope sincerely that you will do that. And I'm going to try to cover as much as I possibly can in this 1 hour time slot that we have. You know, it's really not an hour. It's only when you get right down to it, and everything is said and done, it's about 45 minutes. So don't go away. I'll be right back after this brief pause.
Father, Morning.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to be with you for another day. My days are numbered, so every day means a lot to me. Today's broadcast comes from the pages of the Round Valley paper. We've got our copy, courtesy of Glenn Jacobs, in the mail today. And lo and behold, on page 5, there was an article about something near and dear to me heart. Give you 3 guesses what it is. The title of the article is The Rise and Fall of the IRS by Judith M. Starr-Rohrer. And I certainly admire Judith for trying to make a point about the Internal Revenue Service, but unfortunately Judith is terribly misinformed. And so I'm going to read this article, and then I'm going to set it straight. You see, Judith really takes some of what she wrote from different sources, part of which is the Farmer's Almanac and others. And I take mine from the law. In other words, if it doesn't come out of the law, if it's not thoroughly documented and sourced, then I can't take it right exactly to the truth of the matter, then I don't deal with it. None of our organizations will deal with it either. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to criticize Judith. I'm not trying to say she did the wrong thing. I'm not trying to discourage anybody from writing articles or sending them in to the Round Valley paper. That's not my goal. My goal is to educate. And too many people take too many things for granted in this country. So let me read you this article, and then let me read you a letter that I sent to the Commissioner of Internal Revenue in Washington, D.C. today, sparked by this article. I wrote that letter to the Commissioner of Internal Revenue because of this article. So, Judith, despite the fact that some of your information is erroneous, you have instigated some good work here, and I want to thank you for that. It's entitled The Rise and Fall of the IRS by Judith M. Starr-Rohrer. And she quotes a Nashville Southern lumberman, or the Nashville Southern lumberman, quote, "A citizen is a man who demands better roads, bigger schools, a new post office, and lower taxes," end quote. And this is the text of the article. According to the Farmer's Almanac, the first official income tax landed on these shores on February the 25th, 1913. We were rapidly becoming an industrialized nation. The purpose of taxation is to provide services and security for citizens, in effect, education, highways, utilities, social welfare, and defense. Initially, it was a fair and simple system. In 1923, total government expenditures were at $8.9 billion, with 4.6 of that going local, 1.2 going state, and 3.1 federal. By 1936, however, when the Revenue Act of 1936 was enacted, with the subsequent creation of the Internal Revenue Service, figures began to change dramatically. By then, total government expenditures were up to $17 billion, with the largest piece of the pie, 8.6, going to the feds, 2.4 going to the states, and 6.0 to the locals. In simpler terms, federal spending rose from one-third to one-half in 1936. Also during this period, tax collections rose from about 7.2% of the national income to 11.1%. In that same year, total taxation amounted to 16.4% of the national income. The upward spiral continues to this day. Since the inception of the Internal Revenue Service in 1936, the, quote, system, end quote, has become like a legendary hydra. Cut off one head and two more grow in its place. According to an editorial in the Arizona Republic, I call it the Arizona Repulsive, dated January the 2nd, 1998, last year, the IRS collected nearly $4 billion in delinquencies, issued 370,000 liens, and seized 10,000 properties. Of more concern are not so much the amounts, although they are awesome, being extracted, but rather the methods with which the behemoth extracts them. Many citizens have complained of Gestapo tactics. Take, for instance, the case of the Jewish Mother, a restaurant in the eastern part of the United States. A dismissed and disgruntled employee went to the Internal Revenue Service and complained his former employer was involved in illegal activities, drugs, involving large amounts of unreported income. Without any investigation whatsoever, Internal Revenue Service agents stormed the Jewish Mother and effectively shut her down. They confiscated, at gunpoint, company records and computers. Only after weeks of wrangling was the owner cleared of all charges. By that time, his business was in ruins. More recently, a figure skater who was slated to go to Nagano for the Winter Olympics was jailed for income tax evasion. He had conscientiously objected to the system for years. Last January showed us just how far the injustices have gone. Enter Charles Rossati, a former high-tech executive. As new commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, he ordered agents to stop setting bounties on people. When are we, the American people, going to say enough is enough? And that's an excellent question. Ms. Rohrer, that's probably the most important question of this time. Well, I've got a lot of things to say about this article. It is based upon misconceptions, misinformation, myth, and rumor, ladies and gentlemen. And the Farmer's Almanac may be a good source of when to plant your crops, but it is not a good source for information on the Internal Revenue Service. The first official income tax, ladies and gentlemen, was promulgated by President Abraham Lincoln in the Civil War. It was a war tax. And even then, Abraham Lincoln knew that he did not have the right to levy a direct tax upon the citizens of the states. The income tax for the war effort pertained to the territories and the boundaries of the District of Columbia, known as Washington, D.C., and those in the repatriated or captured or recaptured southern states in rebellion. Okay? The income tax promulgated on February 25, 1913 was known, ladies and gentlemen, as the corporate income tax. Understanding the federal government could not levy a direct tax upon the citizens of the United States, it levied the tax on artificial entities, legal fictions known as corporations. There was not an income tax on any individuals or people until World War II, when the Victory Tax was implemented. The Victory Tax was passed by Congress and automatically self-destructed after 2 years. Just like the tax levied by Lincoln in the Civil War, the Victory Tax only could be levied against those United States citizens who lived within the jurisdiction of the federal government, which is the boundaries of Washington, D.C., the Federal District of Columbia, the territories, insular possessions, dockyards, forts, dry docks, etc. Any taxes paid by the citizens of the states was voluntary. And since the war effort was a big thing then, many citizens did volunteer and did pay the income tax. At the end of the Victory Tax, when it automatically expired, the citizens had forgotten, ladies and gentlemen, that it had expired. And most Americans were paying it to help the war effort voluntarily. At the expiration of the Victory Tax, the government never told the people that it had expired, kept sending out the income tax forms, and kept demanding that the people pay the tax. The tax wasn't legitimized until the federal government passed the Public Employees Tax Act, which said that working for the government was a privileged occupation and that the government could tax the incomes of those employees working for the United States government. But even at that time, ladies and gentlemen, they only had the authority under the Constitution to tax those government employees who lived and worked within the boundaries of the Federal District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., insular possessions, United States territories, dockyards, forts, dry docks, etc. The federal government made treaties or agreements with the several states, individually, each one of them. And if you don't believe it, put in a Freedom of Information Act to see the treaties and or agreements made between the Internal Revenue Service and your particular state of the union. You will get a redacted copy. They don't dare give you the whole copy, even though you're entitled to see it. And you will have to sue to get the whole copy, like I did. And if you get the whole copy, you will find out that it is agreement between the individual states and in the Internal Revenue Service to tax the government employees who live and work for the United States government within the several states of the union. It also reciprocally, because the law says that treaties are reciprocal, it reciprocally gives the states the right to have a state income tax on those same employees. The state, however, extended it to everybody, and so did the federal government. And since you can't get your hands on the whole thing without suing them, and up until you heard me say this, you never even knew that such an agreement existed. There had to be a treaty because the federal government did not have the authority or the power to tax any citizens living and residing within a state. Now, you don't all know that. In fact, the American people, for the most part, don't know much of anything outside of their own personal lives and what they learn at work. And that's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to make some of you mad because you're walking around with a big head and think you really know so much. You don't. I'm not saying that to insult you. I'm saying that to maybe get you to go and check it out. Just check it out. You know what? You're going to find out that I'm right. Most of my life, I was just like all of you. People pay income taxes because their mother told them to. Or their parents did. Or they saw what happened to a neighbor who didn't. And they're scared. They're scared out of their minds. People are so much in fear of the government in this nation, the land, the home of the free and the brave, live in terror of the Internal Revenue Service. Now, there's lots of things in this article that are wrong. I've just begun to touch upon it, ladies and gentlemen. Now, the figures of the expenditures are probably correct. The statement that the expenditures comes from the income tax, however, is not. If you pay the Internal Revenue Service your income tax by check, when you get your check back, look on the back and see who cashed it. It is not the Treasury of the United States of America. It was not deposited in the Treasury of the United States of America. It says, in fact, pay to any Federal Reserve Bank. Pay to any Federal Reserve Bank. Does it say pay to the account of the United States of America? Does it say to the account of the Treasury of the United States of America? No. It says pay on account of the United States of America, which means it's in payment of debt. It doesn't go to pay for highways and roads or any of those things that Judith has listed here in her article. Not at all. She makes a further statement down here that is really, really way off base. And let me find that, because I want to quote it directly. Now I've lost it. I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it. Just hold on. Oh, here it is, folks. She says, the purpose of taxation is to provide services and security for citizens. In effect, education, highways, utilities, social welfare, and defense, and that is wrong. There is nothing in the Constitution for the United States of America that says that the citizens will be taxed by the federal government to provide services on security for citizens, education, highways, utilities, social welfare, and defense. In fact, you're not even entitled to any of those things. There are no rights giving you any of those things. Those things are left to the states to provide, provided that the people of the states want to put money into those things. And for most of the history of this country, there was no such thing as a public education, public highways, public utilities. Social welfare is one of the biggest plagues that has ever been foisted on this country. Or, ladies and gentlemen, defense. In fact, if you'll read the Constitution, the only constitutionally standing military force is the United States Navy. All others are unconstitutional. You see, the Founding Fathers did not believe in standing military forces. They believed that that would be the beginning of the end of freedom. And by golly, it just may be. You see, service, especially lifelong or career service in any military force, regardless of how patriotic or noble it might be, and I served my share, believe me, is nothing more than an indoctrination into a socialistic way of life. That's the truth. That's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. She's right about the system becoming like the legendary Hydra, cut off one head and two more grow in its place. The federal government has grown to the point that it is no longer constitutional in almost any aspect. It has gone way beyond the limitations set for it within the Constitution for the United States and has far, far beyond your imagination exceeded the powers granted to it by the people. It has, in fact, become despotic. It is now in the process of taking freedom away from the people, taking their constitutionally guaranteed creator-endowed rights away, taxing the people in ways that is unconstitutional and, in fact, is forbidden. For instance, she says down here, according to an editorial, and she gives her source, in the Arizona Repulsive, January 2nd, 1998, quote, last year the IRS collected nearly $4 billion in delinquencies, issued 370,000 liens, and seized 10,000 properties, end quote. Number one, ladies and gentlemen, the IRS does not exist. It is a fiction, and I'm going to prove it to you. The IRS had no authority to collect $4 billion from the citizens of the several states, period. The IRS does not issue liens. The IRS does not have the authority to issue liens. The IRS files notices of liens with a county recorder and then takes the evidence of that recorded notice of lien to the county sheriff, who then posts the lien on the property. A notice of lien is not a lien. A lien must be a judgment from a court. Whenever the IRS does that, they are engaging in criminal activity, the unlawful seizure of property, theft, if you will. The sheriffs, not really understanding the law themselves, allow this to happen. In fact, you might say they're co-conspirators in this, since they don't do anything to prevent it. The IRS, being a federal agency and completely without powers of enforcement, that's right, that's what I said, completely under the law, without powers of enforcement, levy or lien or arrest or to serve a subpoena or any of those things, is acting under the color of law and in fact becomes a criminal organization, an outlaw, committing felonies against the citizens of the states. When they seize property, ladies and gentlemen, they are committing an unconstitutional act. They are committing a felony. They are operating again under the color of law and have no authority to do so without a court order and after having gone through the due process as guaranteed by the Constitution and by the law. See, these are things you don't know. You're afraid of a straw man. A straw man that doesn't even exist. You think so? You think so, ladies and gentlemen? You really think the IRS exists? Have you ever received a letter from the Internal Revenue Service? Have you ever looked up in the upper right-hand corner of that envelope and noticed that it is stamped with a postage stamp, or it is stamped by a machine which registers the amount of postage which the IRS must pay? Did you know, ladies and gentlemen, that legitimate agencies of the United States government have franking privileges and do not put postage stamps or pay postage for the mail that they send out? Were you aware of that, ladies and gentlemen? That is the first easily recognizable piece of evidence, easily discovered by any citizen, that the Internal Revenue Service is not an agency of the federal government, is not an agency of the United States Department of the Treasury, and never was. Never was. Now, I know this because I've done the research, ladies and gentlemen. I know also that all agencies of the federal government must be created by an act of Congress. There was never any Bureau of Internal Revenue created by any act of Congress ever. There was never any Internal Revenue Service created by any act of Congress ever. The Internal Revenue Service, unlike other legitimate agencies, does not list its origin in its own regulations. Recently, when they hired a historian to write and maintain the history of the Internal Revenue Service, she found that the history was hidden, intentionally concealed, that there were no records. When she tried to find the records, she was given a hard time and ultimately came under investigation by the Internal Revenue Service, was threatened, was intimidated, and so she quit her job. But not before she gave us an awful lot of information on what she was able to find. If you look under the organization of the Department of the Treasury in the United States Code, you will not find any listing for the Internal Revenue Service, for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and for the Secret Service. None of them were ever created by an act of Congress. None of them are agencies of the United States government. None of them are agencies of the United States Department of the Treasury. Not one single one of them. Now, to prove it, ladies and gentlemen, today I wrote a letter. And I've given the Commissioner of Internal Revenue 20 days. Now, when you talk about a number of days, when you're talking about government, that's 20 working days. So it's going to take 4 weeks to get an answer back, if I get an answer, and I'm going to tell you right now, I will receive no answer. My letter will be ignored. If I do get an answer, it will not be to the question that I ask in this letter, which is a very simple question. If I don't get a letter within 20 days, I will tell you of that, and you can expect that that's what you're going to hear. If I do get a letter, I will read that letter on the air. Now, I'm going to read to you the letter that I sent to Mr. Charles O. Rosati, the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, 1111 Constitution Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20224, March 8, 1998. I wrote this letter because Judith's column Judith Rohrer's column inspired me to do so. I want to thank you, Judith, for that. Dear Mr. Rosati, many years ago, I tried to find within the Internal Revenue Code the section which created your agency, the Internal Revenue Service, but I was unable to find it. I then decided to locate other sources of information regarding how the Internal Revenue Service was established, and what I found was nothing short of amazing. In 1972, an Internal Revenue Manual 1100 was published in both the Federal Register and Cumulative Bulletin, see 37 Federal Regulations 20960-1972-2, Cumulative Bulletin 836, a copy of which is attached for your convenience on the very first page of this statement published in the bulletin. The following admission was made. 3. By common parlance and understanding of the time, an office of the importance of the Office of Commissioner of Internal Revenue was a bureau. The Secretary of the Treasury, in his report at the close of the calendar year, 1862, stated that, quote, the Bureau of Internal Revenue has been organized under the act of the last session. Also, it can be seen that Congress had intended to establish a Bureau of Internal Revenue, or thought they had, from the act of March 3, 1863, in which provision was made for the President to appoint, with Senate confirmation, a Deputy Commissioner of Internal Revenue who shall be charged with such duties in the Bureau of Internal Revenue as may be prescribed by the Secretary of the Treasury or as may be required by law, and who shall act as Commissioner of Internal Revenue in the absence of that officer and exercise the privilege of franking all letters and documents pertaining to the Office of Internal Revenue. In other words, the Office of Internal Revenue was the Bureau of Internal Revenue, and the Act of July 1, 1862 is the organic act of today's Internal Revenue Service, end quote. This statement, ladies and gentlemen, which again appears, well, let me read it as the letter. This statement, which again appears in a similar publication appearing at 39 Federal Regulations 11572-1974-1, Cumulative Bulletin 440, as well as the current Internal Revenue Manual 1100, essentially admits that Congress never created either the Bureau of Internal Revenue or the Internal Revenue Service. To conclude that, quote, Congress thought it had created this agency, end quote, is an admission that even the government itself cannot find anything which created either agency. The only office created by the Act of July 1, 1862 was the Office of the Commissioner. Neither the Bureau nor the service was actually created by any of these acts. I have no doubt that when employees of the Internal Revenue Service were researching its origins so that this statement could be included within Internal Revenue Manual 1100, those employees must have performed a very thorough investigation. This obviously is the best position that your agency can develop regarding precisely how the Internal Revenue Service came into being. But besides the problem that these acts simply did not create either the Bureau of the Internal Revenue Service, is the fact, either the Bureau or the Internal Revenue Service, is the fact that these acts were repealed by the adoption of the revised statutes of 1873. Now, as an aside, ladies and gentlemen, and just as an explanation, even if they had, which they didn't, and you can check the laws yourself and see that they did not create any bureau, any agency whatsoever, known as the Bureau of the Internal Revenue Service or the Internal Revenue Service or the Bureau of Internal Revenue. None were created, period. Very easy to find these laws, and it's very easy to read them. But even if they had, those acts were repealed by the adoption of the revised statutes of 1873, which did not create or continue those that had existed in that act. Therefore, it would appear that your agency has never been created by any act of Congress, and this is a serious flaw. At the state level, it is a well-acknowledged rule that a duly constituted office of state government must be created either by the state constitution itself or by some legislative act. See Patton versus Board of Health, 127, California, 388, 393, 59, pages 702, 704, 1899. One of the requisites is that the office must be created by the constitution of the state or it must be authorized by some statute. First National Bank of Columbus versus State, 80, Nebraska, 597, 114, NW, 772, 773, 1908. State X. Rel. Payton versus Cunningham, 39, Montana, 197, 103, page 497, 498, 1909. State X. Rel. Stage versus Mackey, 82, Connecticut, 398, 74A, 759, 761, 1909. State X. Rel. Key versus Bond, 94, West Virginia, 255, 118, SE, 276, 279, 1923. Quote, a position is a public office when it is created by law, end quote. Coin versus State, 22, Ohio, Appellate, 462, 153, N.E., 876, 877, 1926. Quote, unless the office existed, there could be no officer, either de facto or de jure. A de facto officer is one invested with an office, but if there is no office with which to invest one, there can be no officer. An office may exist only by duly constituted law, end quote. State versus Quinn, 35, New Mexico, 62, 290, page 786, 787, 1930. Turner versus State, 226, Alabama, 269, 146, S.O., 601, 602, 1933. Oklahoma City versus Century Indemnity Company, 178, Oklahoma, 212, 62, P. 2nd, 94, 97, 1936. State X. Rel. Nagel versus Kelsey, 102, Montana, 855 P. 2nd, 685, 689, 1936. Stapleton versus Frohmiller, 53, Arizona, 11, 85 P. 2nd, 49, 51, 1938. Buchholz versus Hill, 178, Maryland, 280, 13 A. 2nd, 348, 350, 1940. Krawick versus Industrial Commission, 372, Illinois, 560, 25, N.E., 2nd, 27, 29, 1940. People versus Rapsey, 16, California, D., 636, 107, P., 2nd, 388, 391, 1940. Industrial Commission versus Arizona, State Highway Commission, 61, Arizona, 59, 145, P., 2nd, 846, 849, 1943. State X. Rel. Brown versus Blue, 20, Washington, 2nd, 47, 145, P. 2nd, 554, 556, 1944. Martin versus Smith, 239, Wisconsin, 314, 1, N. W. 2nd, 163, 172, 1941. Taylor versus Commonwealth, 305, Kentucky, 75, 202, S. W. 2nd, 992, 994, 1947. State X. Rel. Hamblin versus Yale, 29, Washington, 2nd, 68, 185, P. 2nd, 723, 728, 1947. Morris versus Peters, 203, Georgia, 350, 46, S.E., 2nd, 729, 723, 1948. Weaver versus North, Bergen, T.P., 10, New Jersey, Super, 96, 76, A. 2nd, 701, 1950. Tomaris versus State, 71, Arizona, 147, 224, P. 2nd, 209, 211, 1950. Pollock versus Montoya, 55, New Mexico, 390, 234, P. 2nd, 336, 338, 1951. Schaefer versus Superior Court, N and 4 Santa Barbara County, 248, P. 2nd, 450, 453, California Appellate Court, 1952. Brushingham versus State, 86, Georgia Appellate, 340, 71, S.E., 2nd, 698, 703, 1952. State X. Rel. Matthews versus Murray, 258, P. 2nd, 982, 984, Nevada, 1953. Doster versus Andrus, 342 Michigan, 548-70 in W second, 765, 767, 1955. Hetrick versus County Commission of Anne Arundel County, 222 Maryland, 304, 159 A second, 642, 643, 1960. Meeland versus Cody, 359 Michigan, 78, 101 in W second, 336, 341, 1960. Jones versus Mills, 216 Georgia, 616, 118 SE second, 484, 485, 1961. State versus Horde, 264 North Carolina, 149, 141 SE second, 241, 245, 1965. Planning Board of TP of West Milford versus TP Council of TP of West Milford, 123 New Jersey Super or Superior, 135, 301 A second, 781, 784, 1973. And I could go on and 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 on. Let me continue. I'm going to skip over a bunch of these sites. I think you get the point. I continue with the letter. This same rule applies at the federal level. See United States versus Germain, 99, United States Supreme Court, 508, 1879. Norton versus Shelby County, 118, United States Supreme Court, 425, 441, 6, Supreme Court, 1121, 1886. Quote, there can be no officer, either de jure or de facto, if there be no office to fill, end quote. United States versus Mullet, 124, United States Supreme Court, 303, 8 Supreme Court, 505, 1888. United States versus Smith, 124, United States Supreme Court, 525, 8 Supreme Court, 595, 1888. Glavy versus United States, 182, United States Supreme Court, 595, 607, 21, Supreme Court, 891, 1901. Quote, the law creates the office, prescribes its duties, end quote. Cocknauer versus United States, 248, U.S. 405, 407, 39, Supreme Court, 137, 1919. Quote, primarily, we may say that the creation of offices and the assignment of their compensation is a legislative function, and we think the delegation of such function and the extent of its delegation must have clear expression or implication, end quote. Burnap versus United States, 252, United States Supreme Court, 512, 516, 40, Supreme Court, 374, 376, 1920, Metcalf versus Eddy, Metcalf and Eddy versus Mitchell, 269, United States Supreme Court, 514, 46, Supreme Court, 172, 173, 1926, NLRB versus Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Louisville, 350, United States Supreme Court, 264, 269, 76, Supreme Court, 383, 1956. Quote, officers normally means those who hold defined offices. It does not mean the boys in the back room or other agencies of invisible government, whether in politics or in the trade union movement, end quote. Crowley versus Southern Rye Company, 139 F, 851, 853, 5th Circuit, 1905. Adams versus Murphy, 165 F, 304, 8th Circuit, 1908. Scully versus United States, 193 F, 185, 187, D, Nevada, 1910. Quote, there can be no offices of the United States, strictly speaking, except those which are created by the Constitution itself or by an act of Congress, end quote. Commissioner versus Harlan, 80 F. 2nd, 660, 662, 9th Circuit Court, 1935. Varden versus Writings, 20 F. Sup, 495, E.D., Kentucky, 1937. Anani versus Blass, Nattles, Ayers, 94 F. 2nd, 513, 515, 1st Circuit Court, 1938. And Pope versus Commissioner, 138 F. 2nd, 1006, 1009, 6th Circuit, 1943. Since I have reached the conclusion that the Internal Revenue Service has never been created by Congress, I am asking you to provide to me the citation of any statute which really did create the Internal Revenue Service. Since this is a question of profound national importance, I request that you provide an answer to me within 20 days. failing a response without that within that time period, I shall conclude that you cannot find any such statute and shall act accordingly, respectively, William Cooper. You see, ladies and gentlemen, what are you afraid of and why are you afraid? What can they do? You know, if every American citizen would stop being afraid and become the powerful citizen that they are, most of our troubles would evaporate before morning. Did you know that? But it's not going to happen because most people are scared silly of anything. They want to know what's in it for me, or how can I stay out of trouble, or I'm not going to take any risk. Not me. Oh, no, no, sir. I'm not going to say anything. I don't care what they do. It'll never happen to me, just the other guy over there, that guy down there. Baloney. Folks, it will happen to you. Sheep are always sheared and then led to the slaughter. Let me say that again. Sheep are always sheared and then led to the slaughter, always by a Judas goat whom they trust, and a shepherd whom they believe sincerely is looking out after their best interests and would never, ever hurt them. It's not really funny. But when you've been at this as long as I have, sometimes it is funny. Sometimes it's hilarious. I've got to tell you. Sometimes it's just absolutely hilarious, ladies and gentlemen. I can't believe somebody wrote in the paper that we're supposed to get welfare and highways and education and all that stuff from the federal government. Where does it say in the Constitution that we're entitled to any of those things? Or that we have the right to any of those things? Or that the federal government is supposed to furnish them? You want to know the answer? Absolutely nowhere. And in fact, if you want to know the truth, if you really want to get down to the reality of the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land, the federal government is not allowed to do any of those things. Those do not come under the powers granted to government. In fact, the federal government is severely restricted from messing in any way within the states except for certain specific powers that have been given to it. And I got to tell you, if it doesn't have anything to do with interstate commerce, counterfeiting, piracy, and a few other very few things. And folks, when it comes to interstate commerce, the founding fathers never intended interstate commerce to mean what it has been interpreted to mean. In fact, they didn't intend for any of their words to be interpreted. They chose their words carefully according to the definition of those words. And to really understand the definition of those words, you have to have a Webster's 1828 or earlier dictionary. And to understand the intent of the Founding Fathers, you must read the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers and their writings and their letters and their books and read their speeches. Then you know what they meant. And if you think that that doesn't amount to a hill of beans, I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, intent is everything in the law. To understand the law, you must understand the intent of those who passed the law. That's why we have a congressional record. That's why the writings of the major lawmakers of this nation and the major figures in the founding of this nation have been preserved so carefully over the years. It could even be said that that body of writing may be even the foundation of the law. Most people don't understand the foundation of the law in this country, and that the first document of the law in this country didn't have anything to do with this country.
was called the Magna Carta. The second document in law is the Mayflower Pact. And then come some of the pacts and constitutions and agreements and contracts made by the first colonists in their colonies and towns, in the societies that they formed. And then the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation are still a part of our law. The Constitution for the United States of America, the Bill of Rights. Many things that most of you have never read, never looked at, don't understand. I fail to see how they cannot be understood because they are so simple. They are simplicity. The Constitution for the United States of America consists of 7 very short articles. The Bill of Rights, 10 very short articles. The Bill of Rights is, in fact, a part of the Constitution and is not separate from it, as many of you believe. A copy of the Constitution for the United States of America without the Bill of Rights is not a complete document. Is not a complete document. Did you know that for anything that Congress does to have an effect upon the citizens of the states, it cannot be an act of Congress, but must be legislation passed in Congress assembled, and it must use that language. An act of Congress, ladies and gentlemen, by definition, does not apply to the citizens of the states, but to the Federal District of Columbia, the territories, insular possessions, dockyards, forts, dry docks, and etc. You've been so misled so many years. My heart goes out to you all the time. The years that I was lost in that fantasy land of thinking that everything was okay and that I understood everything, but I didn't know beans about anything. When I look back on it, it's like a century in a deep, dark, evil forest, stumbling around at midnight, bumping into trees. Not being able to see the evil lurking all around me. That is the state in which most of you find yourselves today. Now I stand in the middle of a flower-studded meadow with my children playing around me and my wife standing at my side, bathed in warm sunlight. And I can see the evil long before it even begins to threaten me. Since I've left that dark midnight forest, things have become much more simple. And I am free, freer than any of you may ever be. But to have that kind of freedom, you also incur a great risk. That is the price of freedom. And eternal vigilance and the willingness to die for what you believe in, for that freedom, for the future of your children. That is the price of freedom. Those who are not willing to pay that price might as well go down and purchase the chains and fasten them securely around your own ankles. Save everybody the trouble.
Don't miss tomorrow night's episode of The Hour of the Time. It's going to be another good one. Sarah Brady is at it again. She has sent out a confidential memo to all handgun control members. Tomorrow I'm going to read it to you. You're going to see what the Wicked Witch is up to now. People don't kill people, guns do. Good night, folks, and God bless each and every single one of you.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Hey, hi. Something's not right.
Throw out your arms. Step well past me. We're here from the government. We're here to help you.
And I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. If you've got a complaint, think of the facts.
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You better obey if you want to come home. Dance the two-step and do what you're told.
Hillary Salala, Reno Janet Dyke, reading the words of General Albert Pike, the money founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said, Lucifer is God across this land. And Clinton saying, take the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of the fourth right, Clinton's preparing it for another huge tax hike. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, creates a panic and rape the nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, the letter that I read on the air that I sent to the Commissioner of Internal Revenue was prepared by William Benson.
Projects, UFOs, and weird genetic combinations. The Nazi doctors didn't die. Come on, get him. They came here with the OSM.
You can get your own copy of that letter from our website, harvest-trust.org. I'm not going to tell you where to find it, because I want you to search the website. If you do that, you'll find a lot of stuff you need to know that you'd never even see. And that's part of my goal, folks.
Inciting riots is crisis creation. Biochip implantation. Vaccinate your kid for UN identification.
This is a test for all of us. So I have today just one simple request. A comprehensive package of healthcare benefits that's always there and can never be taken away.
Atmospheric.
You're listening to 101.1 FM Eager. Classic radio, like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM Eager is your nonprofit community service radio station. Be sure and tune in tomorrow at the same time for another edition, live, of the Hour of the Time, with yours truly, William Cooper.